It is again time for the New American Dream Radio Show, the American Russian novel All We Need Is More Vodka Radio Hour. We have the winds of our own totalitarian society freezing the land solid, a tortured tundra.
What we must have is a new American dream. We are allowed to ask any questions that we have. There are no wrong questions. A new American dream. Out of homes and toasters, but of becoming the type of country we always thought we were. The new America, the real hope of the world.
Some of those who have spoken the truth are no longer here. Their chairs at the Thanksgiving adult big table are empty. Their relatives have sent them to Siberia with a roll of their eyes. So let us begin. Here we go. Scooch up to the samovar, maybe leave your hat and boots on, fill your peasant hands with a warm drink, and listen for the sound of hoofbeats on the ice.
Come gather round, people, wherever you roam, and admit that our country don't feel like our home, and that silence speaks louder than those who condone. If a tweet to you is worth faving, then lift up your voices and put down your phones, for the times they are a-changing. Come in, women and men who hashtag me too. Believe me when I say that we believe you, for weak is the man who calls truth fake news. Time's up, our silence we're breaking. And even though Mel Gibson was in Daddy's Home too, well, the times they are a-changing. Come athletes with platforms throughout the land, who by taking a knee are taking a stand, and before you shout out that they should be banned, listen to what they are saying. Perhaps they'd stand up if you reached out your hand. Well, the times they are a-changing. Come journalists, writers who report the facts, and brandish your pen to fend off his attacks. Look past what he says, look how he acts. The fire and fury is raging, for his words can hurt, but your words can fight back. New York Times, they aren't a-failing. Come leaders who bully like internet trolls, we'll curse you with four-letter words, love and hope. For we will go high even when you go low. The order is rearranging. For you have the power, but we have the vote. The times they are a-changing. Thanks to Jimmy Fallon for the updated lyrics and Bob Dylan for the iconic song. I'm Chuck Gregory. This is the New American Dream Radio Show, and we are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. It's listener-supported radio. The folks at Revolution Radio deserve your support. They have great shows just about 24/7 on two different streams, you know, Studio A, Studio B. Well, hey, we'd really appreciate it. You head over to revolution.radio or freedomslips.com and show them some love with that donate button. It's been a week since the tragic shooting here in Fort Lauderdale, and we're all still affected by it. Tonight, on the New American Dream Radio Show, we are lucky enough to have a deeply personal talk with Rachel Finley about the incident. That will air at about 9:30 p.m., and it's not to be missed. I am proud now to introduce my friend and co-host, Mike Palachek, an American writer.
Hello, Chuck. Tonight we welcome these special guests, Rachel Finley, Michael Annis, Karen Katowski, Julius Alifong, Michael Annis, Frank Rodero, and Phil Ferruccio. So this Thursday evening, we are gathering for the New American Dream Radio Show in Fort Lauderdale, near Duluth, Minnesota, Mount Jackson, Virginia, in Denver, Colorado, in Des Moines, Iowa, in Port Orange, Florida, in Yaoundé, Cameroon, and wherever you are.
And now from Port Orange, Florida, it's Philip Ferrugio with It's the Umpire, Stupid.
All right, good evening, Working Stiffs. America with a K, the cartoon. You know, many baby boomers remember the original Mad magazine, which was founded in 1952. Mad reached its apex during the mid to late 60s when there was so much to satirize about. The Cold War, the Vietnam debacle, the civil rights movement, women's rights, and of course the birth of the pill were among the many great issues to consider during that time. Factor in the presidency of Richard Nixon and would-be, Mad had lots to satirize. We high school and college kids could not wait for the next issue to come out. This writer knows that Mad is actually still around, but the power of its themes were so much greater during those latter years. Well, folks, we are once again entering the cartoon years of this American with a K empire. I mean, can you imagine that a real estate mogul with orange hair in a closet filled with skeletons, along with a resume of reality TV work, can become president of the United States? No, I take that back, because most of his predecessors were never, quote, men of the people, unquote, in any manner, especially Junior Bush. Sadly, very few of my friends and neighbors really care anymore. All the working stiffs that I speak with either have A, gone along for the stock market ride, B, only cared about being safe from the terrorists and, of course, having blacks and browns in their neighborhoods and schools, C, they ran to the phony Democratic Party to keep on conning them with visions of hope and change, or D, they just don't give a damn. They just said, I give up. The empire is too powerful. Well, it's all a cartoon, folks. You have the good guys, we the Americans with a K, and then the bad guys, the ISIL, Al-Qaeda, the drug gangs from south of the border, and the lazy illegals who get free health care on our dime. The good guys will always fight a never-ending battle for truth, justice, and the American way. Kudos to the Superman television show. So you drive in your vehicle and see the countless license plates promoting our armed forces, or proud parent of a Marine or proud grandparent of a soldier posted on the rear window. Remember the phony war on Iraq won in 1991? They came out with those yellow ribbons to honor our troops. Of course, never to honor the tens of thousands of Iraqi civilians destroyed by our collateral damaging missiles and bombs. I mean, do I need to go on? Don't worry, it's just a cartoon, folks. Here is what you all will be facing very shortly due to this insane and obscene cartoon-worthy militarism. In the town of Cranston, Rhode Island, due to critical budget shortfalls over the last several years, the state legislature voted to unilaterally reduce public employees' pension benefits retroactively. Of course, there are lawsuits filed to stop this, but think of the consequences if this ruling is allowed to stand. Now, our right-wing-leaning friends out there will say that these public sector employees get too much of a deal to begin with. They would like to see all workers, but not themselves, of course, or their family members, be at the mercy of the owners of business. As in Florida and many other states, these, quote, right-to-work private sector jobs are the answer to too many giveaways to workers. Yet, no one on both sides of this argument will connect the dots and see the light of truth on this matter. When you have over half of our federal tax dollars going down the rabbit hole of military spending, along with phony invasions and occupations, and close to 1,000 foreign bases worldwide, count the money. The reality is that for generations, Uncle Sam utilized the procedure of revenue sharing using block grants to the cities and their states. This was money that was not to be paid back, by the way. Washington would take some of our tax dollars and send it along to each state to help to use fund whatever programs were necessary for each of their localities. Thus, a city like Cranston would receive enough funding to help with their public employee pensions, among other things. Well, since Congress allowed the military-industrial empire to eat up over half of our tax dollars on the aforementioned actions, well, there is very little revenue sharing and block grants, if any at all. We have already seen how the cherished safety net for the majority of us, has already been tattered. The Cranston example is just one of a million others. Get wise, folks. Stop supporting this insanity, which will very shortly bankrupt us, both fiscally and morally. Thank you.
A special edition of Penn Magazine is now available at pennmagazine.us, P-E-N-N magazine.us. Penn Magazine is named in honor of Penn Jones Jr., one of the first honest researchers into the murder of John F. Kennedy. It's all connected, that day and this. There is an ongoing thread, and that's why it's important to keep doing the work. Because if truth does not come to the United States, it will implode and possibly destroy the world as well. So join with us and let's save the world. Special edition, read all about it. In order to mark the release of The Post, a movie which has the journalism field abuzz about the journalism field, quite appropriately, a blockbuster Hollywood money-raking fictional piece starring Tom Hanks, letting us all know that we are safe while he is on the job. Penn Magazine offers our report on the state of the free press in the United States of America. Something is rotten in the newsroom. PennMagazine.us. We thank you for taking the time to read it. Mike Polacek, editor, Chuck Gregory, publisher. My recommended list for tonight, Debbie Lusignan, L-U-S-I-G-N-A-N. It's also called The Sane Progressive. She has a YouTube channel, but if you go to BitChute, B-I-T-C-H-U-T-E, she has two great videos regarding the Las Vegas false flag event.
And now we join in progress another episode of The Americans. The Americans is brought to us by Crisis Actors of the Homeland, Operation Mockingbird, Operation Northwoods, COINTELPRO, and by Kraft and Blackwater, bringing you Aurora, Tucson, Orlando, the Boston bombing, Sandy Hook, San Bernardino, Charlottesville, and so much more. The Americans dream of marshmallow clouds and lollipop lanes in TV towns, while the world waits, fists clenched, tears streaming. The Americans dream of rocket ships, fireworks, freedom, and alleluia, while they sleep on through the alarm, the house of fire. It's true that the newcomers to Washington, D.C. are different than ever before, but after all is said and done, they are Americans. The construction's underway for the wall around the Washington, D.C. Beltway to drain the swamp with an impressive culvert system, to separate the White House, the FBI, the CIA, the Pentagon, the Congress, and the Washington Press Corps from normal human beings. Scattered around the job site are the wooden boards to be tacked up all around the new wall with the message, "Let me put it this way, while 9/11 was a U.S. deep state operation, probably subcontracted for execution to the Israelis, the entire Washington swamp has been since 9/11 accomplished after the fact by helping to maintain the cover-up." If this is brought into light, then thousands of political careers are going to crash and burn into the scandal. The child left behind and Skippy, the construction worker and self-taught on YouTube demolition expert, have been carrying boxes of secrets from the basement maintenance of secrets office out to the street on Pennsylvania Avenue, where they set the boxes open to the wind and let the papers fly wherever they may. People everywhere were picking up the papers, reading them out loud, and running to show them to others. Well, Cosmo and Imelda Nutt bowled at ping pong pints and pins against the Korean president, Moon Sung Yongil Hung Lo, and Mrs. Hung Lo. In the meantime, the Bubbas have basically become Russia for these Olympic Games and have changed their name to Bubakov and exchanged out the George Foreman grill for a fire pit and a shish kebab stick. "If you are too drunk to fish," said Karlsky Bubakov while standing atop the RV over the microphone and loudspeaker as his epic words echoed to the entire whole world and repeated around and around the Olympic Stadium thing. You might be an Uzbek. And Vice President Toad and Mrs. Toadette are on their hands and knees cleaning up Ping Pong Square while Buzz the Space Dog and Ricardo the Space Cat supervise, making sure they don't miss any poop. As a Bradley tank rolls into the area on Pennsylvania Avenue in Washington, D.C., where the child left behind and Skippy the construction worker and self-taught on YouTube demolition expert keep ripping open cardboard boxes of secrets they've taken out of the basement office of Fred the Maintenance Man of Secrets, with the name tag Ralph, who's just now waking up on his own cement office floor after having been knocked out by Skippy. Why no bobsled competition? Moonsung Young Ilhung Lo asked Cosmo Nut as he came back from just missing the 7-10 split and offering Nut a dark dung beer. Why did Vice President Toad send out the Toad bobsled memo? We think they're terrorists, said Nut. Said Hung Lo. Meanwhile, the child left behind got up and walked over to the tan camo tank and stood in front of it. She stood there in her white dress with a handful of secrets clutched tight at her side. A soldier poked his head up out of the tank. You need to hand those over to me, little lady, he said. Or put them back in the box and down to the basement where they belong. A high-pitched squeaking sound signaled the arrival of more tanks. So, said the Korean president, let me get this straight. You think that bobsled competitors are terrorists because you only see them every 4 years at the Olympics? Exactly, said Nut, speaking back over his shoulder as he prepared to roll. That's what our research shows. He shot his ball straight into the gutter and then walked to hold his hands over the dryer. Makes perfect sense. They have these big bobsled training facilities deep in the mountains with cafeterias, weight rooms, movie theaters. I've seen the drawings. The Korean president made a subtle signal to one of the individuals in his party, and three doctors and five nurses sprang into action, taking Cosmo Nut's temperature. Moonsung Young Ilhung Lo talked to his wife in Korean, saying that the American president was not well, and if he died here while bowling, it would not be good for world peace. Maybe more dung beer, said Mrs. Hung Lo. Yes, yes, very good idea, said Mr. Hung Lo, and he made a subtle secret gesture that meant more dung beer for the American president. Come on, Missy, said the tank commander. There are some things you just are not supposed to know. You need to leave the real world to the adults. Mouth breathers, muttered the child left behind. Come on now, be a good girl, sweetheart, said the man. I don't think so, she said, holding up her handful of papers. It's just not your day, Zeke. She opened her hand and the papers shot up with the wind and flew like doves. Up, up, up they soared. Stay tuned, as next week we find a bunch of Bubakovs competing in the Quidditch competition to close out the Olympic Games. And Randall from Stevens Point headed for the Himalayas, because you know why. While Mark, the most dangerous blogger on planet Earth, is leaving Ping Pong South Korea in one big hurry, headed to cover the professional bowling tour, as President Cosmo Nut has made an announcement saying he's decided to take a vacation from being president, and he and Imelda are going to travel the United States competing in professional doubles tournaments, representing Ali's House of Jihad.
Moonrock Books. We're a group of scholars, experts, and authors who feel the world really needs saving, and that resisting the American Empire is the right thing to do. People are starved for truth. They are given lies. They subsist on lies, but it's not really living. People are not watching TV news. They're ceasing to read newspapers, too, because they know by now they will not find it there. The biggest battle being fought anywhere is with information. If the people can receive the truth, they will do the right thing. We are publishing the truth about Sandy Hook, about the Boston bombing, about the moon landings, about the Holocaust, and much, much more. The truth. It falls upon us to fight the Empire and save the world. Join us, Moonrock Books.
The following is an excerpt of Richard Dolan talking about parents and children in the United States of America. Would these children know they live in a fascist society? Would their parents know they live in a fascist society? Is it possible to live in a fascist society without realizing it? Of course it's possible. When you talk about fascism, people instinctively talk about Hitler and Mussolini in brown shirts and walking goose step down the streets. That's fascism that's in your face. Of course, it doesn't have to be like that. That's not the defining feature. Fascism can be sexy. Fascism can look like American Idol or Monday Night Football, internet video games, or whatever. It can be the things that distract you, the citizen, from what's actually going on. Fascism, in other words, can be a lot more attractive than they realize to people. What we have is invisible fascism. It's fascism that people can't really see, frankly, because most people don't have the conceptual tools to understand what's happened. Most people have to work. They've got families. They've got things to do. They're not out there to fight the machine. They're not out there to be heroes. They're just out there to live their lives. They don't want to have trouble. They haven't really studied this matter. They may feel in their bones that there's something wrong. Sure they do. But it's one thing to feel there's something wrong, and it's another to be able to put it all together and to conceptualize it and to see how it's wrong. So I see what has happened is that it's a fascism that you can feel, but you can't see it because you don't know how to see it. That's why I call it invisible. That's what we have. In other words, for us to assume that today fascism is going to look like Hitler's fascism, well, that's kind of stupid. We're living in a completely different century, a completely different era. Of course, it's not going to look like Hitler's fascism. It's going to look very different. 9/11 plays a crucial part in allowing that because what was necessary was to have a legal revolution within the United States. And that, of course, is what 9/11 has allowed. It has allowed a fascist revolution. What else would we call it?
Mama, take this badge off of me. I can't use it anymore. It's getting dark, too dark to see. I feel I'm knocking on heaven's door. Knock, knock, 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 knocking on heaven's door. Mama, put my guns in the ground. I can't shoot them anymore. That long black cloud is coming down. I feel like I'm knocking on heaven's door. Knock, knock, 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 knocking on heaven's
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow, Monday, 6 to 8 p.m. EST, Studio B.
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Our next guest is Frank Cordero. Frank joins us each week from Des Moines, Iowa, the Des Moines Catholic Worker. Chuck visited with Frank earlier, and we're going to get to hear that conversation between Chuck Gregory and Frank Cordero right about now.
Yo, Chuck.
Well, hello, Frank.
You catch me by surprise, and then when I look at your name on the ID, I go, oh, yeah, it's Thursday. It's time again to talk. Talk to my my weekly touch-in, five-minute confession. Here I am, what I'm doing.
Okay.
Great to hear your voice. We're dealing with lots of icy, strange weather. Transportation has been very difficult.
Oh, really?
But you guys don't worry about that. You got it all warm. As long as people aren't shooting each other, God help us.
Exactly.
That's been a lot of wrenching moments just watching the TV and being so inspired by these young people's ability to articulate and speak truth to power, that's the silver lining in a very otherwise awful event.
Yeah,
I'd like to say awful singular event, but that's really the tragedy. It's not a singular event. It's a repeating event.
Yes.
And the killings that take place are far more the ones in Chicago and the cities. And it's just a wholesale murder world here in the U.S. And we haven't got a clue. All this talk of the NRA is powerful because they have money in politics.
Yeah.
Not because they're popular with people or not because they're Democratic. And the only thing that matters in this country is money. Mm. And the money in politics is the only politics that talks. Mm. And we have a Supreme Court has said that money is free speech. The hell it is.
Huh.
Money is entitlement. And you get to own the government in a country that sees money as free speech.
Yeah.
So it's just another ringing kind of like follow the money. And you figure out really one of the critical things that basically handicaps what we call democracy. I'm not real sure we ever had anything like it, but today's democracy are so far out of touch with any words that semblance of democracy that, it is just, these are dark times. And I made a great chicken soup today for a snack, and I backed it up with a turkey casserole tonight. They're serving it right now, or soon to serve it at 6 o'clock for the supper. I got to cook twice today, so that's my life is filled with stuff. And again, I must let the folks know that nothing has changed as far as Jess and Ruby. However, I just got notice over the internet that the state legislators in Iowa have passed a new sabotage law against people who destroy infrastructure.
Huh.
And they're making it a class one felony, 25 years a beginning charge. So, of course, it's all referencing Jess and Ruby as it's for acts like this that they want to do that.
Right.
So it's painful. Mostly it's just painful for me. And the beat goes on. Other things going on with the Jess and Ruby front and the whole issue of destruction of property within the Catholic worker movement. Is they had just a great February issue of the Catholic Agitator. If you're out there, look up the Los Angeles Catholic Worker. Mm-hmm. Go to their February issue, the most recent issue on their webpage. And some great articles about the challenge that Jess and Ruby are giving to the Catholic Worker movement. Huh. So that's something I would ask folks to do if they have a computer and inclined to do so and find out more about these extraordinary women. That's about what's going on. I'm a guy who's looking for spring for lots of different reasons, but I got to move on. Keep doing this work. And I, you know, one thing is really remarkable is people do keep coming to this house and are interested in serving. So we have a batch of new people and a few more coming. So, these things come in waves, tidal waves, the tide. and when you're in a big community, Catholic worker, like big Catholic workers, there might be 5, 6, 7, 8, maybe 10 of them where there's like multiple properties or one big property. And you have anywhere between 10 to 20 people in your community. That's a big Catholic worker community. Not all communities, very few, just a few are like that. Ours is within that realm where we bounce between 6 and 16 people. We're getting back in the up in the numbers. We just need to find more people who are willing to commit being community members. So that's just a constant thing. It's great work though. It's great work.
Well, it is wonderful work. And, I'm proud to know you, Frank.
I am touched that you came and you broadcast right from the Phil Bergen Celtic Worker House in Des Moines, Iowa. I'm telling you, that's going to be a classic show.
And you sang for us.
That's right. That's right. All right. It was fun.
Right.
All right, brother. God bless you.
Bless you too, Frank. Talk to you next week.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And now we hear from New American Dream special correspondent, Hunter S. Carlin.
Please consider the White Rose and whether it has any relation to our current situation in 2016, 2018 in the United States of America. The group included 22-year-old medical student Christoph Probst, 24-year-old Hans Scholl, also a medical student, and Hans's 21-year-old sister, Sophie. They were part of a small group of university students whose code name was the White Rose. They had seen clearly the loss of liberty, the shredding of human rights, and the disturbing reality that the war was probably already lost. These altruistic young Germans were alarmed at the fear and apathy that they witnessed in the adults all around them. They were troubled by the fact that no active resistance movements were being organized by anybody that they knew. The White Rose students, of which there were dozens scattered around Germany, knew that Hitler's aggressive war-making torture and state-sponsored terrorism were making Germany the most hated nation in the world. Being real patriots who loved their homeland enough to have an argument with it, they felt they had to do something to stop Hitler. So in late 1942, the White Rose started composing and distributing amazingly insightful, well-written leaflets warning their fellow Germans about the criminal regime that most Germans seemed to be tolerating without objection. These altruistic students were wise enough to realize that they needed to use nonviolent resistance tactics in their efforts. They had witnessed the brutality of the Homeland Security agencies, the secret police, and the see something, say something policies that encourage folks to snitch on their neighbors. 75 years ago, on February 23, 1943, three courageous German college students at the University of Munich were beheaded by the Gestapo after being arrested 5 days earlier and convicted of treason earlier in the day.
The 9/11 Museum was unveiled and opened a while ago in New York City, which begs the question, where will the Museum for Democracy be placed? It should be in Washington, D.C., we would think, or yeah, you're right, right next to the 9/11 Museum in New York City. I know, right? The Museum for Democracy will have a walkway from the 9/11 Museum and will have artifacts from September 11, 2001, such as the TV tapes and transcripts telling us not 10 minutes after it happened that it was done by Osama bin Laden. There will also be the missing video from the surrounding area showing the missile hitting the Pentagon. The Democracy Museum will also have artifacts from November 22, 1963, Oklahoma City, Waco, Wellstone, RFK, MLK, Sandy Hook, and Boston. The Democracy Museum will have a tape of Dan Rather telling us the Zapruder film shows Kennedy's head and body lurching forward. It will have the bullets found on the street next to J.D. Tippit's body, the second and third unexploded bombs found inside the Murrah building, the charred bodies of the children at Waco, the flight recorder of the Wellstone plane, the photos in the pantry of the Ambassador Hotel confiscated by the Los Angeles police, the real investigation into who are H. Wayne Carver, Gene Rosen, and Robbie Parker. The real investigation into who really died or was injured at the Boston Marathon. And stuff like that. And now a public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, Walmart, and Martha Stewart. We are now on triple secret orange alert. Pull the apple pies from the windowsills, secure the baseball fields, the Chevrolets, secure grandma. Bubba Kaida and Bubba Sis have been spotted in the U.S. They are born in a small town in little pink houses, getting their thrills on Blueberry Hill, getting their kicks on Route 66. Be afraid. Be very afraid. Our next guest of the show is Karen Katowski. Karen Katowski joins us each month from Mount Jackson, Virginia. She is a retired lieutenant colonel in the Air Force. She was stationed at the Pentagon on the day of 9/11. She's a radio show host, a writer. Find her stuff at lourockwell.com. She ran for Congress in Virginia unsuccessfully, but she did try. And we're going to try and contact Karen Katowski right now in Mount Jackson, Virginia.
Hello.
Well, hello, Karen. It's Chuck and Mike and the New American Dream Radio Show, and you're on the air.
All righty. I guess what I wanted to talk about today is, I guess it's part of the New American Dream in some ways, or the nightmare, but the school shooting down in Florida, the most recent one, and the reaction amongst those who are concerned about school shootings, and of course they should be, but in particular the reaction about the gun control and more gun control. We already have a lot of gun control, but they want even more, and that's fine. In a democracy, we'll probably get, as we've seen in the past decades and even centuries, you know, increasing restrictions on what you can buy, whether it's guns or anything else, drugs, you name it. There are restrictions on purchase and free trade and ownership and quantities and data tracking of what you have and don't have. And this is not just about guns. We have it with many, many things. I mean, you can't drive on the roads without a series of state-granted permissions and licenses. So we're very, as a society, you know, we will see increased restrictions on types of weapons that people can buy, and that is notwithstanding any Second Amendment rights. It's notwithstanding, principles of whatever, because those aren't shared principles in this country. What is increasingly a shared principle in this country is that the majority dictates to the minority. And it's funny because many of the people who are most apt to demonstrate and to be upset about a lot of things feel that they are minorities that are being dictated to by a majority. But in fact, it's actually not that way. We are a socialist country in many ways. And that means, well, we're a democracy, you could say. We're not really a democracy, but we're a constitutional republic. Doesn't really operate that way. So to the extent that we have democratic system, the only thing we had to protect minority rights were a set of rules and principles and law. But that's very malleable, and that's changed. That's, you know, you could say, oh, that's the Constitution, that's this or that. But those things have evolved in their effectiveness. They, in some ways, maybe weren't effective at all. But what we have retained about the democracy is the majority rules, 51% rules. And a lot of the same folks who right now are upset about certain type of weapons that this kid bought legally, whatever, and that kind of thing. And I've got some more to say about school shootings here in a second, or violence against public schools, the people inside those buildings. But, you know, a lot of the people who are most upset today are those who didn't get the presidency because 51 or 52% of the Electoral College, which is the law system that guides how we pick our president, that a small majority there ruled over the minority against their wishes. And they're very, very upset about that. Mr. Cheeto president, they don't like him, because why should a very slim majority in the Electoral College, when he didn't even have the majority in the Democratic vote, but why should the legal structure that gave him the presidency with just a small margin, that feels unfair to them. That enrages them, as it well should, because democracy is a pretty sick system. Okay, if you don't guarantee, if you don't have some sort of legal system or society or value system or religious system or nature, whatever it is, if you don't have anything like that to weigh in to defend the minority, democracy is simple majority rule. And that means the majority, the 50.1% rules, and the 49.9% suffers. It's not about consensus. It's not about, you know, getting along. So I'm about trade. See, free market trade, I choose where I spend my, I vote with my dollars. That's a really good system because not everybody wants the same thing and we're not forced to have it. But in politics, that 51%, that majority rule, it's a dangerous thing. So we're getting it. And this is what H.L. Mencken said, you know, he said, we are, so I'm going to paraphrase here, but he said, we deserve to get democracy good and hard. Well, yeah, it's happening. It's happening right now. So jumping back or ahead, however you want to look at it, with the school shootings, you know, I wanted to talk about this tonight. In preparation for it, I looked at Wikipedia, of course, who doesn't, to see the list of all the violence in secondary schools. They had it divided. I guess there's not a lot in elementary, but they had it in secondary schools, and they listed it globally. So, you know, most of them were in America, as far as I could tell. But there were some in China and Europe and whatever. And they started back in the 1800s, and it was interesting because in the 1800s in America, we had school attacks in schools. But interestingly enough, in the 1800s, it seemed to be students attacking teachers who had disciplined either them or one of their siblings in a bad way or flunked them. And so it was a revenge killing, and they used knives and they used revolvers, and every once in a while they used a rifle. This is kind of the 1800s kind of school violence thing. It was aimed at the teachers. And then you go through the decades into the 1900s and to the present day. You see a little bit of a shift. Very often it's aimed at other students who have been bullying them. Occasionally teachers that flunked them. Lots of use of knives, rifles, revolvers are popular. Not too many ARs like happened with this kid down in Florida. But and increasingly, too, as we get into our increasing, you know, our drug-addicted society, you do have a lot of people. Well, and again, 1800s, emotional, sure, people can't handle their emotions, emotional problems, people with issues. That is actually the one constant. The weapons of choice are the weapons they could get their hands on. That's also a constant. To some extent, you see that repeated there. The tools or the weapons that they used were what they had. Why they did it, because they were mad. They felt somebody had treated them badly, whether that was a teacher in the 1800s, which seemed to be the trend, or more recently in the 1900s and beyond in the 2000s, bullying, response to bullying by other students. People didn't like me, I didn't like them, whatever. So I'm not trying to justify any of this. I'm just saying, these patterns are historical. We can learn from looking at history. It's not an AR that does this kind of thing. In fact, the deadliest, and this is what was also interesting, several of the school attacks, both in the United States and in other countries, were really, really deadly. And in almost all cases, minus the one that happened this past week, in almost all cases, they related to purposely set fires or the use of explosives. In fact, the one famous one that maybe nobody knows about it, but it is kind of interesting, was the one set up in Minnesota, I think, or Michigan, 1927. And the guy he was upset. He was an adult. He was upset about some policies, and he set his car up as a bomb blew it up outside the building. And killed a ton of people. Now, what kind of weapon could you restrict there? It was this gun with nails and explosives. So basically, to me, look, restrict all the guns you want. We restrict drugs. It certainly hasn't stopped them. If you restrict weapons of a certain type or this or that, other weapons will be found, because this is about human violence. This is about human rage. It's about humans being a little bit crazy. Perhaps maybe they're on too many prescribed drugs. Maybe they're suicidal. And in so many cases, the people are suicidal. So how are we going to outlaw that? Let's outlaw suicide. Becca. Is it? Perhaps it is outlawed. Well, why don't we outlaw it? Let's double outlaw it. Because that doesn't stop it. That doesn't address the problem at hand. It's not about the tools. It's not about the laws. We'll get the tools that we want, and we'll ignore all the laws that don't suit us, which we do anyway, all you speeders out there that don't follow the driving laws. Come on. We only honor the laws that fit with who we are. So that's really the question. Who are we? Who do we want to be? And then can you legislate that? I don't think so. But if you could, go try that. Go try that. Because that's the problem. Not the weapon, not the knives, not the guns, not the multi-shooting guns, rapid-fire guns. Shotguns were very popular throughout both centuries, and they still are. You know, you don't have to be a good shot to kill people with a shotgun. Okay, so we're going to outlaw that too. Really, the problem is human beings. The problem is people, and we don't like to deal with that, but we have to. 51% telling the other 49% this is what you're going to do. You can call it democracy. I call it democracy. I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan of it. But that's what we have. And if you think it works, then you need to go study some more. You need to go look at history. It does not work. Okay. What works is respect for people, respect for individuals and what individuals need. So anyway, I'm not impressed. Not impressed at all with the chatter. I'm not impressed at all with the directions. We're not getting at the problem. And I haven't even begun to talk about why public schools are such a target. We can do a show on that sometime. We can talk about that. We should. So anyway, those are my thoughts.
Well, Karen, that was really a fascinating take on this. this latest school shooting was in my county. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, I know people.
It's terrible. I'm not making fun of it. It is an awful, terrible
thing. I know that. I know. You're bringing in the historical perspective was really very, very interesting. And you brought up some examples I did not know about. So,
Yeah, well, you know what I didn't know about when I was looking at this? We had another school shooting a month ago on the 23rd of January in another state. I didn't even hear about it. And several people were killed. Yeah, and it was not with an AR, but it was with a gun. And similar kind of thing. So, I mean, a student or a recently passed student, something like that. And I didn't hear about it at all. And I'm trying to understand why I didn't hear about that. Because it's in Wikipedia. It happened 2018, January 23rd, I think it was. So we didn't hear about that one. And then this one, of course, very terrible and tragic. But the solutions, I think, are it's very difficult to reflect when you're feeling all this pain. And people are. But we have to. Because otherwise, the solutions that we think we're going to put forward, if they're not, well, if we don't understand human nature, if we're not really addressing the problem, no matter what we do, if we're not addressing the problem, if we're not understanding what's driving it, we'll be wrong. So we can ban all the guns we want, but they'll come in with knives and kill people. Why? Well, they bullied me, or I don't like the teacher, I hate public school, or I'm high on something, or I'm depressed and my pharmaceuticals are making me paranoid. Whatever those things are, but we're not talking about those things. We're just saying it's the tool, but there are many tools. There are many tools to destroy lives. And so, I do understand it because it's an easy demand for the majority to get behind. And I think that 51% or more is probably behind it, and we'll probably see it happen. But what my thing is I don't think it's going to save lives. But, you know, that's the world we live in.
I think just because it's a force multiplier that it may save some lives, but you're 100% right. It's not the heart of the problem. It's just...
Yeah, well, yeah, it's... you know, many of the students, when you look at the ones that have happened before, they stole the weapons that they used. Whether it was a pistol or anything else, they stole it. So I don't think banning is... keep them out of the hands of people that want them. of stuff. Just like marijuana is not out of the hands of people that want it.
Thanks so much, Karen, and always bring a fresh perspective to us. And
okay, good. Okay, well, good. I'm glad I was able to do that.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Hey everyone, it's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship. Or be quiet. Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship. You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth. You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free, but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
Tune in Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for Liberation Nation with Deacon John, where America comes to hear the truth.
I know this is hard for you Americans to imagine, but please try.
Anti-aircraft guns went into action against unidentified aircraft in the Los Angeles area shortly after 3 a.m. Pacific wartime this morning.
We are far stronger than we were 10 weeks ago.
General Quarters, all hands at your battle station.
Be nervous, count your toes. I'll do the mastermind around here.
You have not seen it, do not know what hell looks like from the top.
Check it out every Tuesday and Saturday on Revolution Radio. It's a double dose of the internationally recognized renegade military historian, Douglas Dietrich.
You'll stay right where you are till I tell you to move out.
Yeah, that's right. Tuesdays from 10 to midnight Eastern Time. Join Douglas Dietrich as he exposes the truth in hidden history on his show, Critical Omissions. And then our human weapon of mass destruction is back once again to take your calls on Saturday night firing lines. Both from 10 to 12 p.m. Eastern Time. Only on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Our next guest is Julius Awafong. Julius joins us each month from Yaoundé, Cameroon. Julius sends along this introduction to his piece tonight. Sometimes people wonder why African states endowed with so many intellectuals find it hard to embrace real development, fight corruption, or have their universities classify among the top-ranking universities of the world. It shouldn't surprise us anymore because when a hyper-centralized and corrupt political system takes hold of the academia, the results become evident. And now Julius Awafong from Cameroon.
Mike, I'm looking for that recording. It's not where I thought I put it, and so give me just a second to find it.
Okay. Well, I know that Julius is a student, and I think he's an activist in Cameroon, and we've had Julius on the show for a little over, well, I don't know, it's probably longer than 3 years, and we're very happy to have Julius join us. And if you're listening, Julius, over there in the early morning, thank you very much for taking the time. Thank you for caring enough to do this each month, and thank you very much for the shows, and we'll be finding it soon, I hope.
I'm working on it. I'm re-downloading it. Just hang on just a second.
Okay. Well, I just would like to say that we have a very, as Chuck said before, we have a very, they're all special, but tonight we have a very special piece coming from Rachel Finley, who lives down there in the same area as Chuck, where the shooting recently took place. And I know that the shooting news is all over mainstream sources and YouTube, and there's all types of opinions about the school shootings, and it has kind of taken over the news, at least for a few days, and I haven't heard yet what Rachel has said, and I'm anxious to hear what she does say. And after Julius, and we will get his whole, Julius, if you're listening, we'll still have time for all of your piece. We'll have Michael Annis coming to us from Denver. Michael is a poet, executive editor of Howling Dog Books. And I haven't heard either what he has. His is also pre-recorded tonight. Some of the pieces are live and some are pre-recorded because sometimes guests don't have time or are busy when the show is taking place. And that's the case with Julius tonight and with Michael, also with Phil and Frank. And
I'm going to play this directly into the microphone so that we can get it up quickly. So the quality may not be quite as good as it would have been, but we should be able to hear it all right. And so here we go. It's Julius Awafong.
Thank you, Chuck. Thank you. When politics, Machiavellic, or politics void of ethics, politics academia, we have such a disastrous result. Last week, I read an article about how power abuse on education corrupted the vice chancellor of the University of Zimbabwe, which doubles as the oldest university in Zimbabwe, to award a PhD to the first lady, Grace Mugabe, just 2 months after she studied. 2 months of classes. Chancellor has been arrested in connection with an investigation concerning this matter. This is one of the reasons why African youth, conscious of the destructive tendencies of their politicians, agree that Africa is a shithole continent. They agree with Trump, as I presented last month. Commenting on this, a friend told me that we are living in an era where the opposite of everything seems to be the rule, especially with people who have money and occupy positions of power. This again falls into what I talked of last time when I presented something on the death of expertise. This is one of the reasons why some or most African universities, especially those in the sub of the Sahara, find it very hard, find it difficult to appear or fall within the classification of renowned universities worldwide. The University of Yaoundé II, Cameroon, where I study, last week saw the birth of a conflict between the newly appointed rector.
Mike tells me he's having trouble hearing this. Let me suggest that we go right ahead and we'll play Michael Annis's piece, and then I will try to get the Auerfong piece ready while that's going on.
Sounds good, Chuck. Thank you.
So you want to tell us about Michael?
I did before, but Michael Annis is the executive editor of Howling Dog Press, and he's a poet, and he joins us from Denver, Colorado.
Hello.
Well, hello, Michael. It's Chuck and Mike from the New American Dream Radio Show.
Well, hi, Chuck. Hi, Mike. It's good to be back on the New American Dream program again. Tonight, I will read the first canto from my poem. It's titled The War Between the Sons of Darkness and the Sons of Light. It's a subsection of Brave New World Order, which I've been performing here for the last couple years. The War Between the Sons of Darkness and the Sons of Light contains direct references back to Brave New World Order and vice versa. They are interlinked, being written during the same period. Brave New World Order is the major work of interstitial creative nonfiction, and this subordinate piece is poetry written in a style I developed that I call image collision. It not only augments the major work, but also forms its own independent narrative. The piece is divided into cantos, which are groupings of stanzas similar to chapters if the work were a novel. The title of the poem, The War Between the Sons of Darkness and the Sons of Light, is taken from one of the ancient Dead Sea Scrolls of the same name. Thus, my poem is likewise comprised of personal meditations on what is termed the end times. In the winter of 1991, I was invited to the United States Military Academy at West Point, New York, to kick off their poetics program. With some trepidation, I accepted, thinking the CIA might meet me there to break my thumbs and kneecaps because of my reputation as an outspoken agitator. However, needing the money, I took the train from Kansas City to upstate New York to one of the little towns across the Hudson River, where I was picked up by a lieutenant general who brought me back to West Point. The week that followed, I gave readings and seminars to cadets, all incredible, respectful young men and women desiring to serve their country and get a good education, and who I thought were the cream of the crop of their generation. I also gave readings to a group of 50 or so Soviet military officers who were part of the Russian militarized rifle corps, commandos that had stormed into Afghanistan. To the cadets, I gave a final precaution to not fall victim to scoundrels and ethicless manipulators through their desire to serve their country, for it could cost them their lives or their sanity. What is the astronomical rate of suicide among vets returning now from the Middle East and Afghanistan? It seems to be increasing all the time. During my stay at West Point, I ventured to New York City, where my witness resulted in this poem, primarily based within the city microcosm. However, the eye of the poem moves out into the Midwest, to the West Coast, the South, and elsewhere, funneling everything into itself as a vortex of universal human disinheritance. One might wonder why I offer such an old poem, being first written 25 years ago. It was highly prescient at that time, and its perceptions continue being proved accurate and provocative. In fact, the future now, from the poem past, is even more exacerbated, amplified, and self-evident than when it was originally conceived. It's like looking into time's funhouse mirrors. And now, beginning with a quote from the Dead Sea Scrolls, I will read Canto 1, where the initiatory imagery involves the paradox of the Statue of Liberty. Quote, exalting the melting heart by his justice, opening the mouth of the dumb for his joyful song, endowing with strength hands that were slack, teaching them the arts of war, giving firm stance to tottering knees and vigor to the shoulders of the bowed, let destruction befall the sons of darkness, but let thy great light shine for the sons of light. Now is the heart that was melting turned to a wellspring of hope. Into the hands of the needy hast thou delivered the adversaries in all lands, and into the hands of them that were bowed to the dust. End quote. Dead Sea Scroll. Excerpt, Descriptions of the Final Age. The War Between the Sons of Darkness and the Sons of Light, Canto 1. New Torch City, elusive dream, breeds emotion, psychoanalyzed screams, green liberty, copper facelift, witch lips beckon under hot nightlights, dawn, sparking halos, bitch for the rich, disguise the blight, harbor statue, over rooftops, among the fireworks floats the magus of violence, posing as mercy, portends another reenactment of conviction, hung jury, acquits the scene, harbors hearts, erupts depravities, clustered minds, engulfed in flames, sorting sorties, rain friendly fire, heads explode in grief and pain, moored sunshineless off the coating waste of strychnine Hudson, minds ruptured surface cyanidals, sensing decay of their own rust. Corporate zealots retrain your pain to meticulously annihilate you. Hairstyles on trends are simple heads shaven, branded, tattooed, boxcars filled with bioelectronic, rocking, next dull trash bag wooed for Buchenwald, large wet eyes mirror black camp dust, building tunnels in Darwinian dumpsters, death warmed over just passing through the DMZ, formed between the polished steeple and the chosen word. Corporate parallels smartly drawn between cattle and defective humans, Mother Nature beyond philosophy, a scythe to thin the teeming herds once removed. Chad, Congo, Ethiopia, land back first in the opportunistic zoo. Concentration camps for the deaf and terrible, gentle and cruel. The strongest shall survive. Let them learn to live and fry together as one for all and all for one under the barrel of the capitalist gun. Auschwitz fairyland in the bombed out ghettos of the American nightmare. Gays and babes, blacks and strays, all with AIDS and or opposing viewpoints. Designated for kinder and gentler classified concentration camps. Never again war! Never again the camps! After our corporeal Armageddon. Skinned blue children dancing shoeless, roaming Harlem's dumps at night. Why waste a cruise to El Salvador? Queens is just around the corner. Your cross bears a crossbow, liberating destitute's possessions. Gypsy cabs bearing witness roam bombed out Brooklyn fright. What color Harlem's sidewalks? Red, black, blue, ochre, white? In the eyes of her overlords, Harlem's children glow, trumped green. In vaulted hearts of the subdivided, silvered buildings shine proud sheen. Power centers deriding conspiracy theorists in separate but equal blasphemies. Sweat, bones, and blood of the disinherited are dying wombs for seething cities. Eyes get wistful, reflect shame in fistfuls, missed over close call with enlightenment. He lost his whole family, his wife, his mom, his sister, his dog, his kids. Now he wants us. His abject loneliness scowls. Skin mags are not enough to keep him entertained, complacently accompanying him to the trough. Without a coat, without a bottle, through the chill of street winter, he lays down on heating grates, drunk, yet not contented, nostrils sucking warm air underneath, billows smiling hypothermia. His reinvented dreams of small sculptures of pain and futility, tiny icons of neglect, dusty in their hovels, canned laughers awaiting their next situation comedy. First applause of the audience, cheer from the academy for tragedy, ripped out of their prefabricated canistered skulls on stress, flirting tracked stress points converging on the tip of a shared hypodermic. Hot mock collision of double standards and hypocrisies, hypercrisis, youth in Asia swirling down the vortices, indignation stirring heaven with hell, their parents' doubting tongues fork out both sides of their mouths, spreading official abscesses, save face, incompatibly sewn together, hurtle along opposing highways, reneging values and validity. Cities banded together like sticks of frothing dynamite, humans chained, daisy chained together in carnal eruption of lust and fright, establishing invalidity, erasing past and future for the immediate caption, out of time, deserted heaps like junked vehicles, common derelicts, shedding corpses, backfiring corrosion, spewing curses at passing cars. Space flesh roasting over post-historic campfires, simmering intellect with passion in primordial stew, stirring dusk into dawn, light into darkness, by sorcerer's wands and test tubes, flames lick assholes, tongues full of embers, suck breasts and bone, sparking lips smack excitedly for another radioactive tidbit. Sperm anticipates panspermia, rocketing Earth to heaven, Mars to Venus, as seeds of love become hate, seeds of eternity become dust, as good old boy intent becomes a yoke to enslave the masses' trust. Refined demoniacs grace the land, speculating exploitation of the resigned herds. Red lips reflect degraded flesh, dull-mirrored irises, fattened stems and thighs. Blades gay, skins gray, hearts prey, minds prey, wives stray, and designer jeans continually dieting. Loneliness abounds as human refuse strafed and lying in the gutters. Sorrow cries out under worn soles of stained and leaded feet. Sheep bleat makes our hearts meet, meek and pure, aborted in trash cans and wheelbarrows. Oh, invidious, invictus screaming, horrid presence of the silence of God. Stabbing, stabbing, stabbing through masses with blood babbling on its lacerating tongue. Unholy sea, rote screen scam flashed at 1st and 10. We finally closed in, holding him accountable, but his magnificence escaped through a hole in the ozone. What price glory, asked the child molested by the pastor who drummed her bones. What price victory, asked the nubile starlet kissed, then raped by her trainer doctor. What price America, asked the father seduced, then murdered by disaster capitalism. For 30 pieces of silver, Wall Street delivers us, into the kingdom's chasm of disinheritance.
We're very fortunate to have Michael Annis back on our show, and we're hoping to have him back as a regular. He's at least been back on the last couple months, and we hope to have him continue. And now I believe that we finally have the Julius Alafong piece, and I'm going to start it right away.
Thank you, Chuck. Thank you, Mike. When politics, Machiavellic, or politics void of ethics, controls the academia, we have such a disastrous result. Last week, I read an article about how power abuse on education corrupted the vice chancellor of the University of Zimbabwe, which doubles as the oldest university in Zimbabwe, to award a PhD to the first lady, Grace Mugabe, just 2 months after she studied, 2 months of classes. But that was today, since we no more have Mugabe in power. The vice chancellor has been arrested in connection with an investigation concerning this matter. This is one of the reasons why African youth, conscious of the destructive tendencies of their politicians, agree that Africa is a shithole continent. they agree with Trump, as I presented last month. Commenting on this, a friend told me that we are living in an era where the opposite of everything seems to be the rule, especially with people who have money and occupy positions of power. This again falls into what I talked of last time when I presented something on the death of expertise. This is one of the reasons why some or most African universities, especially those south of the Sahara, find it very hard, find it difficult to appear or fall within the classification of renowned universities worldwide. The University of Yaoundé 2, Cameroon, where I study, last week saw the birth of a conflict between the newly appointed rector and the dean of the Faculty of Law and Political Science. This conflict arose from the fact that the dean allowed a professional doctorat, I put it in quote because these are mainly Francophone or French import. I don't even know if it happens in France, but a neo-colonial coinage, professional doctorat, to be defended as a regular or classical PhD thesis in the Department of Law. In a communique, the rector highlighted the irregular character of this defense, which, according to him, passed through voluntary fraudulent channels. He holds that the text organizing university studies in the Central African subregion, CEMAC, as well as an RRT signed by the Ministry of Higher Education in Cameroon on the 23rd of December 1999, defines the condition under which the PhD studies should be organized in state universities in Cameroon. And professional doctorate does not feature among or has no legal backing, and it is not accepted to be defended in any Cameroonian university. The rector says that the dean has crossed bounds, and this probably due to the attitude, his insubordinative attitude and deliberate violation of academic ethics and the law organizing state universities in Cameroon. Due to this remark, the rector annulled the defense after it was defended, or annulled the thesis after it was defended. It should be noted that the authorization to accept candidates for the professional PhD was signed by the former rector, Umar Buba. And each student registered for the professional PhD or professional doctorate, I still put it in quote, because I call it a coinage that is peculiar for post-colonial state, especially the hyper-centralized state that acquired the governance method from France. Each student pays 1.5 million francs CFA, equivalent to $3,000. But for the regular or the classical academic method, the degree, master's, and PhD, which is classical, not the professional, each student pays $100 a year. That's what I pay. I pay $100 per academic year. But if you are registered for the professional cycle, you pay $1.5 million, that is $3,000 each year. Now, I'm emphasizing on these financial figures because I'm going to hang on to explain, to my opinion, what really takes place or what is really going on. Now, it should be noted that before being appointed as the dean of the Faculty of Law and Political Science, there were two schools of thought in this university. Some conservatives, including led by the actual rector, who thought that education at the university should be classical. And not people should not be allowed just to get in because they have money. People should go through normal classes and read hard in order to obtain their degrees. Meanwhile, the progressive school of thought led by the dean, the actual dean, holds that, or he said that people should not be prevented from going to school if they have the will to go to school. In other words, anybody who wants to go to school to acquire his degree must do so. Well, want to be educated,
we're not able to get through Julie Xylophone's column. We're not going to have time later on, but we'll try to put it up on our website for you to listen to in its entirety. That's it for this half hour.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist, featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow, Monday, 6 to 8 p.m. EST, Studio B.
Bitcoin, Litecoin, Mycoin, Yourcoin, Blockchain, baby. Mondays at 1600 hours Eastern Studio A.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
I'd now like to introduce Rachel Finley. Rachel is a regular on our show, usually reading poetry, but we have something quite different tonight. And, I'm going to let her tell it. Here we go. I talked to Rachel earlier today.
Hello.
Hello, Rachel.
Hi, Chuck.
Really appreciate your taking the time and effort, emotional effort, to share with our listeners.
Yeah, no problem. I'm glad to have an opportunity to talk to people about what's going on.
Well.
So my son is a sophomore at Douglas High School, and he was there the day of the shooting. His coach was murdered. His friend Helena was murdered. One of my former students, because I taught at the middle school, that is on the same grounds as the high school, over there. It's separated only by a chain link fence. So I know a number of the students that attend the school. And one of those students who was in my improv, after school improv class, her name is Gina, was also amongst those murdered. Along with two other teachers and 12 other children. Right now, you know, this is a community that has always been very family oriented. People move here because of how great the schools are. Douglas High School is the whole reason that I moved into this area, because it's a school that has so many different activities for the children to choose from, great teachers, a student body that is motivated and works hard and really wants to build a great future for themselves. You know, I taught several hundred of the children that were at that school that day. And it was a privilege to be a teacher for those children. You know, there are so many children that I taught there that were just very, you know, strong people from even when they were in middle school. So one of the things I want to address is all of these conspiracy theorists that are saying that these kids are being coached, or that they're not real students, or that they're just actors. If you knew these kids, you would know that's not the case. These are children that have stood up for themselves and been and spoken for themselves since they were in middle school. It's, you know, so it's not like they suddenly today became different people, or like they had to be coached in order to know how to speak for themselves. They've been basically taught their whole lives how to speak for themselves, because they come from families of people that are not, you know, are not people that have just floated through life. These are people who have made very specific decisions about how they wanted to live their lives and what they wanted their children to be exposed to, and chose this community because it is a place where that is the common way of life. You know, the parents here are not typically parents who just send their kids to school and are not involved. They're involved parents. They get their kids tutors. They, you know, yes, a lot of those kids have taken drama classes. I'm a drama teacher. But what we teach the kids in that class, in those classes, is not simply how to memorize lines and pretend to be someone else. You know, as the drama teacher at the middle school, my goal was always to teach those children to be confident in themselves, to teach those children that when the time comes to speak up, whether it's because you're running a business, you're a lawyer, you're a doctor who needs to tell a patient what's going on, or sadly, an instance where you feel that the people in authority have failed you, to be confident that you can do that, that you are important enough to deserve to do that. And, you know, I mean, even one time at the middle school, the thespians director did something that we thought was not right towards our school. And, you know, I came to the students and I said, look, this is what the thespians director has said. How do you guys feel about it, and what do you want to do? And they decided to have a protest at the Junior Thespians Festival. You know, so civic responsibility is not new to these children. This particular situation is has brought them into a situation where they feel a need to do it on a larger scale than they have ever done it before. But they didn't need someone to come along and coach them at this point on what to say or what to feel. They're smart kids, and they're doing what they feel is right and what they feel they need to do in order to move forward. And so anyone who's criticizing them or trying to say that they're not real is so wrong, and clearly doesn't know these children and clearly hasn't taken the time to try to find out anything about them, because if they did, they would know that what they're saying is completely ludicrous. the children that were lost that day, the ones that I know, specifically Gina. Gina, I just want to take a moment to talk about a little bit that Gina was one of the kindest people I have ever met. She was the kind of person that when there was a new kid in school, a new kid in the class, she would be the first person to say hi and try to make them feel at home. She was goofy and silly and funny. I'm She always had a huge smile on her face. And all the time I've known her, I've never heard her ever say a mean thing about anyone. She had great parents who did a fantastic job of teaching her to be a good person. She loved to do volunteer work. She loved to read. She loved to dance. She was creative. She was smart. And she was kind. Another person that I got to know this year who was a victim of this is Chris Hickson. Chris Hickson was the athletic director, and he was my son's wrestling coach. My son has a very strong personality and very strong views that differ from mine and from his father's and from most of his classmates. And as a result of that, he, often found himself kind of feeling separated from his classmates and sometimes angry. Chris Hickson, when my son joined the wrestling team, gave my son a sense of community that helped him to behave in a way that, you know, he was less angry once he started working with Coach Hickson. He had a place where he felt like he belonged. And even now, that wrestling team that Coach Hickson built is a great source of support for my son during this time. Coach Hickson left a legacy that will go on for many, many years to come, even though Chris is no longer with us. And I'm grateful that my son had the chance to know him and to be impacted by him, because he was a great man. You know, he survived a tour in Iraq in 2007 and now was murdered at a suburban high school. It's just, in this community, we work very hard to provide a safe place for our kids. You know, most of the neighborhoods here are gated neighborhoods. I live in a gated community. Most of these kids lived in a gated community. And, we work hard for these neighborhoods. We work hard to live in these neighborhoods. I mean, I can't tell you, I'm a single mother. I have multiple jobs that I work in order to be able to pay for our home. And to work this hard to live in a gated community and then send your kids to a school that has great ratings, that does great things, and have that place be turned into a house of violence, a place of death. It's just so hard to wrap your mind around it, you know. And the idea that our legislators refuse to even talk about it,
yeah,
just disgusts me. We need to replace them all. Every legislator who refused to talk about this needs to be replaced.
Hear, hear.
Every single one of them.
Yeah.
So I just urge everyone to make use of the power that we do have and flip the government, turn it over, clean out the mess that is there, and replace them with people who actually are willing to do something.
Yes. Who actually are willing to do something for others instead of for themselves.
Yeah. To make a difference, to who realize that our children's lives are at stake right now. Yeah. And they're doing nothing. Doing anything would be better than doing nothing. You know, I mean, I have certain ideas of what I think should be done, but even if they don't want to do what I think should be done, if they just did something, that would be better than nothing.
Right.
You know, I personally am very much against the idea of people being able to get semi-automatic rifles. I don't see any reason why an individual should be able to own that. But say you don't agree with that. Are you willing to at least put more money to our schools so that they can do what they need to do in order to properly secure the schools? They're not even talking about doing anything like that. They're constantly cutting the budgets for the schools. They're constantly, you know, cutting back things like the regulations to get a gun have become looser under this current administration. You know, and instead of moving towards, hey, let's make this society safer, let's put money into the people that are going to be our future. They want to make tax cuts for rich people and corporations, and they want to make it easier for people to own guns. You know, law-abiding citizens won't lose their rights if we make it harder to get a gun, because law-abiding citizens will still follow the steps and do the right thing and get their guns if they really feel the need to have one. But people who shouldn't have a gun in the first place will have a harder time getting one. You know, people keep saying, oh, well, he could have bought the gun illegally. This kid is not some hardened long-term criminal.
Mm-hmm.
He's a loose cannon in that case.
Yeah.
He's not going to go and meet up with some seedy character who's a secret arms dealer. He doesn't have those types of resources. My son was in class with this kid. This is a kid who showed other kids dead animals on his cell phone. Like, that's the type of kid this is. This is not somebody who's some kind of mastermind. So if it were not legal for him to get that weapon, no, I'm sorry, he would not have been able to get it. He's not some kind of brilliant, smart person. He's not some kind of mastermind criminal. He's a hurt kid, deranged kid, lunatic, who just doesn't know enough to be able to do that. I'm sorry, but that's baloney.
Yeah,
we can't stop everyone from getting a gun. No, we can't. But we could have stopped that kid.
Yeah.
We could have stopped that kid. That's all I have to say about it.
Well, Rachel, thank you. Thank you so much. I mean, you poured your heart out for us, and I am so moved. I really have a hard time knowing what to say, but my hearts and prayers are with you, but what good is that? People are dead. I don't know. I just want to say,
all we can do at this point is vote. That's what we have to do now. Vote.
Yes, agreed.
Make a change.
Absolutely. Thanks again. I really appreciate your taking this time. And wow, that was so powerful.
Thank you for calling, Chuck.
Oh, bye-bye. Well, it's been another long week in Moonrock Lake, Ohio, at the end of the empire. The American dream has dangled before our eyes for over 200 years. The American dream is the goal that we Americans hold on to when everything else is gone. The American dream is our ideal. Too bad it's just a dream. The Americans dream of marshmallow clouds and lollipop lanes and TV towns, while the world wails, fist clenched, eyes blazing, tears streaming. The Americans dream of rocket ships, fireworks, freedom, and alleluia while they sleep on through the alarm, the house of fire. We pick up our story after Michael M., staff member at Sun God Group Home, has sped off on his moped to tell the people at the workshop that there's a sit-down strike taking place in the Sun God driveway by residents refusing to go to work at the workshop, and they might be a little late. On his way, he swerved to miss a little girl, jumped the curb, rammed his blue flake helmet into a war memorial for World War II at the city park, breaking the war memorial, and now the National Guard and police have stormed the park and taken Michael M. away in a National Guard helicopter. Michael M. was in prison for having rammed World War II with a blue flake helmet, but he loves Homeland, and all he really wants to do is get free so he can get registered for the Home Helper Show drawing and make his wife proud and his children happy. Due to the kindness of another prisoner donating his own teeth to bribe the guards, M was then free and wandering the countryside, a wanted man known as the Big Evil One, only wanting to find a way to get registered for the Home Helper Show. And then he somehow found his way to the very home of the big man in town and his little daughter, who he almost killed but did not, and then got taken away to prison. And the big man in town agreed to help M get registered for the Home Helper Show if M will first do something for him. We pick up our story after the parade and after the election. Boom! An old woman closed the eyes of the young woman in her arms. On the east side, in the neighborhood of Honor Avenue and 14th Street, a cream minivan sat lifeless, smoldering in the middle of the street. Inside the seats and roof and mom and dad and brother and sister and fastened seatbelts blazed bright like Roman candles. Rich black smoke poured from the hulk. Metal and parts and rubber and ball glove and baby doll and Happy Meal slithered the cement and yards around. Sirens and lights and screams and people with hands on their cheeks raced toward the red glare of the bonfire. The old woman on the west side knelt to slide her arms under the girl, never to hold her own child. She pulled the girl to her breast and stood strong. She walked barefoot over the sparse lawn and thorns, across the dirt road, and out into the dry, hard field. A young boy of 10, looking like a 6-year-old, lay on a bed in his family's front room. All around him, relatives knelt and sat as his father led the rosary. The boy joined the refrain as long as he could, then listened, then slept. When his father finished, he walked over to his only son to feel his chest. The man dropped his head to his breast. The mailbox of a brick home exploded, flattening the house and ripping to bloody strips and chunks. A Siamese, a Dalmatian, and a retired couple, all seated in the air-conditioned living room, watching TV, nibbling burnt almond ice cream. At about the same time, maybe a few minutes later, a baby passed away from malnutrition in a grass hut in the country, and the Homeland Bank and Trust was instantly turned into an untidy mass of metal and glass and paper, into brick bits and dust and teeth chips, and parts of skull and femur and crispy, burned white skin. All through the night, as children died on the west side, explosions immediately followed on the east side, including 5 more homes and 7 VJs. An elderly couple with stately gray hair in a winter home in Phoenix out for a night stroll exploded from time devices and the elastic of their Depends. Their heads rolled down the street before bumping into the arms. The limbs provided a perch for the neighborhood crows until daybreak. They hate our big American breasts. Newly reelected Homeland Mayor Dick Heaven stood on the two front steps of the post office with his fist in the air. He wore a blaze orange vest over his camouflage business suit. His orange hunting cap had the flaps down, battle mode. We are protecting you from these terrorists by listening to your conversations at the cafe. If you have nothing to hide, what does it matter? They want to take your freedoms away. We want to be able to allow you to have even more freedom. The sun god bless Homeland 411. We are searching for M, the mastermind of the attacks, who also was the planner for the 411 and the sit-down rebellion. The woman on the street in front of Dick got tired of waiting for him to get out of the way and moved along down the sidewalk. A blast from downtown in front of the bakery blew to bits an old couple barely moving in a shiny new Ford. It also took out the front windows of the Corn Dog restaurant and brought down the movie theater marquee. As Dick raised a finger to make another point, a bomb under the right field bleachers at the ball field sprayed popping popcorn and bloody oozing body parts onto the home team dugout roof and over the bullpen and first base coaching box. And that's the news from Moon Rock Lake. Where all the police and soldiers are thugs, all the journalists and Democrats are cowards, and all the Homeland Security, COINTELPRO, lone gunmen are about average. And that brings us near to a close of another episode of the New American Dream Radio Show. I apologize especially to Julius Awafong for not being able to get his segment out there tonight. We only got about half of it. We will try to get it up on the website. And I'd like to thank, once again, Rachel Finley, for sharing her story about the shooting out in Parkland at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School. And thank you, Mike, and good night.
Thank you, Chuck, for all you do, all the interviews, the technical work, everything that makes the show possible. And thanks to our guests, Rachel Finley, Michael Annis, Julius Awafong, Karen Katowski, Phil Ferruzio, and Frank Cordero. Please visit the New American Dream website, where you'll find information about all of our regular guests. Also, show archives, newdream.us. Also, penmagazine.us. If you'd like to donate to the Des Moines Catholic Worker, write to the Phil Berrigan House, 713 Indiana Avenue, Des Moines, Iowa, 50314. And so, good night to my friends, Chuck and Lorraine. Stay warm down there. Good night, Mr. Calabash. Good night, Todd Beamer. Good night, Mark Bingham. Good night, Timothy McVeigh. Good night, Charlie Hebdo. Good night, Don Hawksbrum. Good night, Ken Lay. Good night, Mohamed Atta. Good night, Omar Mateen. Good night, Noah Posner. Good night, Crystal Campbell. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.
Oh, where have you been, my blue-eyed son? And where have you been, my darling young one? I've stumbled on the side of 12 misty mountains. I've walked and I've crawled on 6 crooked highways. I've stepped in the middle of 7 sad forests. I've been out in front of a dozen dead oceans. I've been 10,000 miles in the mouth of a graveyard. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard rain gonna fall. Thank you, everyone. Good night. Thank you.
freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Take a look around, kid. What do you see? Homes being foreclosed. People working 2-3 jobs just to put food on the table and still drowning in debt. Don't get me wrong. This country was founded on great ideals and principles. They've all been ruined by the banks. Open your eyes to the banks that are robbing you. You know who my favorite president was?
Who?
Thomas Jefferson. Because he saw all of this coming and tried to stop it. He fought the banks. JFK too, and they killed him for it. The banking institution is more dangerous than an army, he said. He also said that every generation needs a revolution, Jimmy. The American dream is just that. Just a dream. War is a continuation of politics, only by other means. Politics is a continuation of economics by other means. This is our bank. This is our war. And this is our plan of attack.
Banks have become an essential threat to our democracy. So consider this
justice.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution. Radio!
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We've got to stop them! They're going to kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being!
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part, you can't even passively take part, and you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop, and you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves